United States versus Johnson.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Long Trong, and along with Michael Gomez, I represent Corey Johnson under a 7-Eleven license for the Northwestern School of Law. We ask this Court to vacate the lower court's verdict in this case for two reasons. First, the District Court erred by failing to give the jury an instruction on a buyer-seller theory of defense. Second, the evidence presented was insufficient for a rational juror to find that Johnson took part in any agreement to distribute drugs, much less the vast conspiracy the government presented at trial. Turning first to the jury instruction issue, the District Court didn't give a buyer-seller instruction to the jury, and that means that they could have impermissibly conflated mere distribution with the agreement necessary for a conspiracy conviction. Johnson was entitled to the instruction because there was ample evidence in both the defense and the government's case to warrant the instruction. However, ample evidence is not required. Instead, the amount of evidence required is much lower than that. All that is required is some foundation in the evidence to warrant giving an instruction.
Did you preserve your objection to the, or did you have an objection to the failure to give the instruction?
Yes, Your Honor. On page 745 of the transcript, after tendering the instruction, which had law at the bottom supporting it, the defense counsel engaged in a colloquy with the court and the government attorney stating its reasons for why the instruction should have been given.
Can I ask you about page 745? I've looked at page 745, and it's about as short a colloquy as you can have and use the word colloquy. But is there any more to it? I mean, there's a reference in here by Mr. Murphy about, I provided the court a case yesterday. Was there anything in that part of the record that, I mean, you know, when I do instruction conferences, that's not all I have for jury instructions. Sometimes even at a pretrial, we'll talk about jury instructions, and there may be more to the record, but we've got basically a page here, right? That's the colloquy you're referring to? It caught my eye. Is there anything more to it?
Your Honor, unfortunately, there is not very much more at all. The previous day, at the end of the day, after the jury had left, they went over many of the instructions, and when talking about this instruction, the government attorney spoke about a case that he wanted to give the judge, did not mention what the case was, did not really give us any information about that, really, so to speak. But turning back to the preservation issue, after having given the defense's reasoning for giving the instruction, the district court ruled on the issue, and at that point, there was no further reason for the defense. All he essentially didn't say was the word objection. So all that is required in this case is that there be some foundation in the evidence to warrant giving the instruction. And in this case, that meant that standard would have been met if even one alleged co-conspirator had engaged in a mere buy-sell relationship with Johnson. Paul Kasten by himself satisfies this threshold because he testified that he bought drugs from Johnson merely for his own personal use. However, Kasten isn't the only evidence of a buyer-seller relationship. In fact, five of the alleged co-conspirators in this case were clearly buyer-seller relationships. The district court's failure to give the instruction is important because of the government's trial strategy in this case, where they essentially piled up evidence of Johnson's drug sales in front of the jury and invited the jury to conflate distribution and conspiracy. In fact, they even explicitly said so in closing when they said, quote, you can base a verdict in this case on that evidence alone that the defendant was trafficking in over 50 grams of crack. Given this, we can't know if the jury would have found the charged conspiracy or the drug amounts required for conviction under statute had they been given the tools to properly evaluate the evidence before them. Thus, by denying the instruction, the district court denied Johnson a fair trial. I'd like to turn quickly to sufficiency. The weakness of the sufficiency of the case is shown by the government's retreat on appeal, where they spent only one paragraph defending five of the six spokes of their wheel-shaped conspiracy. On appeal, the government now focuses entirely on Ty Johnson, turning this wheel-shaped conspiracy into a chain-shaped conspiracy with a single link. However, the evidence shows that at most, Johnson aided and abetted enticed distribution, and this court has said many times that aiding and abetting is not the same as the agreement necessary for conspiracy. If there are no further questions, I'd like to save the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Hartzler?
Good morning, Your Honor. It's Joe Hartzler for the United States.
Good morning.
If I may, I'm certainly willing to address the various preliminary procedural questions, but I'd like to jump to the sufficiency, because I think the real crux of this case is the conspiracy between Corey and Ty Johnson. And if you look at the evidence developed from the testimony of Ty Johnson, you realize that Ty Johnson was a dealer dealing out of Bloomington by his own admission, and that Corey Johnson, by virtue of the evidence that was presented from a number of witnesses, was a drug dealer out of Peoria. There's no evidence that Ty Johnson ever bought drugs from Corey Johnson. The very first transaction established a conspiracy between them when they agreed to go jointly up to Chicago, and once they arrived there in the garage, Ty Johnson handed $10,000 for a half kilo of cocaine to Corey Johnson, who went into the back room and came out with the drugs. The next transaction, it was for $19,000 and a kilo of cocaine. So you know that they were getting a volume discount, a lower price for the full kilogram. After those couple of transactions, the agreement between the two, and I'm saying agreement obviously by inference, I don't mean to imply that he said, oh, we agreed to do such and such, but the conspiratorial arrangement continued such that then there was a division of labor between the two men. The risk of making the phone calls and ordering the drugs from Big Homie was borne entirely by the defendant, Corey Johnson. The risk of being stopped on the highway with the drugs was borne almost entirely by Ty Johnson on each trip that he took. They pooled their resources, which is very strong evidence that the two of them had an agreement, and presumably they fooled them in order to get the volume discount. Ty Johnson then drove up to Chicago, picked up the drugs, brought them back. Corey Johnson distributed in Peoria, as you know from the various witnesses. Ty Johnson distributed in Bloomington by his own admission. The two of them continued in that relationship until Ty Johnson left for Hawaii. And then possibly the best piece of evidence the government presented to show that there was this conspiratorial agreement is that they reached an arrangement, an agreement whereby the Bloomington market would continue to be supplied by Corey Johnson because Rico Trice then took the place of Ty Johnson. Ty Johnson was going to go off to Hawaii. Rico Trice stepped in. Rico Trice was a customer of Ty Johnson's. Rico Trice stepped in and received his drugs from Corey Johnson. So they kept the Bloomington market, Ty Johnson's Bloomington market, sort of in the family. It didn't go to another supplier. So I think the evidence of a conspiracy between those two is really overwhelming. With that evidence, and of course Ty Johnson was the first witness in the case, a start-off witness, the government established that there was conspiracy. But not only did the government establish that there was conspiracy between these two, there is no evidence that there was ever a buy-sell relationship between Corey Johnson and Ty Johnson. And it would be for that reason that the district court was justified in refusing to give the buyer-seller instruction and giving instead the conspiracy instruction. Now, conceitedly, there's a lot of other evidence about the buyers out of Peoria that bought from Corey Johnson, who clearly are not, we're not alleging that they are conspirators. They proved the distribution. Well, why was that important? That was the defense. You asked Judge Dow about the objection to the buyer-seller. There was no buyer-seller defense in this case. The defense in this case throughout was that Corey Johnson was not a drug dealer. And you see that consistently. So as these things proceed and in district court. The government sort of got it, and the defense presentation was going to be that that he was simply a user, never a dealer. I am not a dealer. He had the two witnesses, a girlfriend and a wife, testify. The one said he's a user of drugs. He was only a user of drugs, never a dealer. That was really the defense.
But isn't the defense case just part of what you're supposed to look at here? And don't you have to also look at the totality of all the evidence? I mean, I know that these cases here, and both the key cases I think that everybody's looking at here, Askew and Johnson, are plain error cases, so they're a little bit different. But isn't it a totality thing? Why not just give both of the instructions, and if the evidence is overwhelming on conspiracy, you're going to win that one?
Oh, the easy way out? Oh, for sure. Maybe you might as well just give the buyer-seller instruction in every case then. Essentially, the evidence of the buyer-seller relationship for Ty Johnson and Corey Johnson was non-existent. There was no evidence of a buy-sell between those two.
But what about the other five?
Oh, yeah, no, there was buy-sell. But you know from the jury's verdict when they found over 5,000 grams of cocaine, that came only from one witness. Mm-hmm. That had to be the Ty Johnson testimony. There was no other witness that came up with any place close to that volume of cocaine.
But it sounds like what you're arguing might be harmless error, too.
Yeah, that was, I thought in arguing the sufficiency of the evidence and the plain error and everything was clearly inferential, and the court would not get to this issue because the evidence of Ty Johnson and Corey Johnson. So that was an excellent catch by opposing counsel. I agree. I'm definitely arguing harmless error. And to the extent that I waived it in the brief, I hope you'll take it out on Joe Hartzler and not take it out on the government. That was an oversight. There's no question about that. They
but from the cases, it looks like the waiver is optional anyhow. That's,
yes.
Your take on that would be that if we got to harmless error, we could just do it based on the record? We could just look at the record and decide that it's harmless error?
If you reach the conclusion that there was not a waiver of the instruction and that the buyer-seller instruction should have been given despite the absence of evidence of tying Corey, then I think based on the government's presentation about the sufficiency, there being ample, overwhelming evidence of conspiracy and our argument about plain error, you can tie those together and then the court itself can conclude that it had to be harmless. It had to be harmless because the jurors found more than 5,000 grams of cocaine. That had to be based on Ty Johnson's testimony. There was no other way around it. So I guess I gave you a sloppy, indirect answer. Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. No, that's fine. Thank you.
I hope I've addressed all the questions that were raised. If there are any other, I'd be pleased to answer. Otherwise, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Hartzler.
Michael, if you want to raise this, just push the red button and then push it again when you want to stop.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bowman?
May it please the court. I'd like to address a few of the government's arguments, and I'd like to start with the buyer-seller issue. As the standard of review, Johnson's counsel adequately preserved this issue for review when he submitted the instruction, cited a supporting authority, and engaged in a colloquy with the court as to his reasons why the instruction should be given.
What does Rule 30B say?
Your Honor, Rule 30 states that the counsel must give a timely objection and must state the grounds for that objection. And in this case, basically the only thing the counsel did not say was the word objection. And this court has refused to require form over substance when considering whether an issue has been preserved for review. But even if this court decided to undertake a plain error analysis, it would find that the district court's error in refusing to instruct the jury on the buyer-seller defense was plain. It was clearly established law at the time of the jury instruction conference that all that is needed to entitle a defendant to a particular instruction is some foundation in the evidence. It's not evidence beyond a reasonable doubt or a preponderance of the evidence even. It's merely some foundation in the evidence. The district court's
closing argument, he argued that the evidence suggests that he was a mere drug user. Isn't that correct?
More than that, Your Honor. Actually, on page 796, defense counsel argued that Johnson had bought drugs from one of his alleged co-conspirators, Robert Griffin. And moreover, Shantisha Carpenter, Johnson's girlfriend, had been called up to the stand, and she testified that Johnson had purchased drugs and was a habitual user of drugs. So that was part of his defense. But
he
didn't even have to put...
The defense was that he was a user. He wasn't involved in a conspiracy with anybody to buy or sell or distribute powder or crack cocaine.
Right. His defense was that he was not involved in a conspiracy. Correct, Your Honor.
He was a user.
Correct. That he was a user and that he was a purchaser of drugs, which was... But the focus of the jury instruction test is on the evidence, not even whether the defendant advanced a buyer-seller theory of defense. And in this case, there was ample foundation in the evidence, both in the government's case in chief and the defendant's case, to support the giving of this instruction. The error is even more obvious in light of the fact that defense counsel pointed the district court to evidence in support of the instruction. And even after this, the district court refused the instruction. Now, as Your Honor correctly pointed out, the government did waive its harmless error analysis, but it does not foreclose this court from poring through this complex and fact-intensive record to determine whether the error was indeed harmless. And a careful examination of the record will show and leads to the inevitable conclusion that the error was not harmless. The government today, and in its brief, pretty much told you that there were these five alleged co-conspirators who were who had buy-seller relationships with Johnson. And it attempts to hang its hat on sufficiency and on the buyer-seller issue entirely on the relationship between Johnson and Ty. But, Your Honors, we do not know the cumulative effect, the fact that the jury was not given this instruction and that they could not parse out five of these six alleged co-conspirators. We do not know the cumulative effect that those five had on the jury's determination of the relationship between Ty and Johnson. In fact, we know that the jury attributed some of the drugs from the other alleged co-conspirators to the conspiracy conviction because the jury found on the special verdict form that there were 50 grams of crack, that the defendant had conspired to distribute 50 grams of crack as well. And, Your Honors, a careful examination of the relationship between Ty and Johnson, there was simply insufficient evidence to find a conspiracy, that a conspiracy existed between the two. There was no pooling. There was no agency. There was no shared stake in any distribution efforts. There was simply no agreement to further distribute any drugs. At most, at the very most, and we're not even saying that this was the case, but at the very most, Johnson aided and abetted Ty's distribution efforts. But that cannot sustain this conviction on appeal. First, the government never argued that to the jury, never argued that theory of liability. Second, the district court never instructed the jury that it could find liability on that theory. And finally, in light of the fact that the jury never made a determination on this issue, this court cannot affirm the conviction on that basis. So if there are no further questions, we ask that for the reasons we stated here today and the reasons in our briefs, that this court vacate Johnson's conviction. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gomez. Thanks to all counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.